This is Audible.
Audible Original Publishing presents Fight and Flight, Magic 2.0, Book 4. Written by Scott Meyer. Performed by Luke Daniels.
The following is intended to be a fun, comedic, sci-fi fantasy novel. Any similarity between the events described and how reality actually works is purely coincidental. 1. The eight of us have been killed a combined total of 67 times, Jeff said. This strikes me as a problem. A youngish man in a silver sequined robe raised his hand. I'm not a school teacher, Martin. If you have a question, you can just ask. Martin glanced around at his friends, wearing their wizard robes and hats, seated in a cluster of chairs in Jeff's home, a small, unassuming blue hut that, thanks to a magical portal he'd created and a much larger hut out in the woods, appeared to be bigger on the inside than it was on the outside. Jeff stood at the front of the room addressing them. Martin said,
Sorry. The whole thing just kind of gave me a Hogwarts vibe.
That's fine.
Anyway, I don't have a question so much as a statement. None of us is dead.
Yes, well, when I say we were killed 67 times, what I mean is that we were nearly killed 67 times, and were only saved by the use of magic or dumb luck.
Then why not say that?
I wanted an opening line that was a real grabber. Something to get your attention before I show you the chart.
Gary raised his hand. The loose sleeve of his black robe slid down to reveal a thin, bare arm, as the Dokken t-shirt he wore beneath it had short sleeves. The pale skin of his arm almost matched the bleached white bone that made up his skeletal, artificial leg.
I have two questions. One is, aren't we all here for movie night? The other is, what chart?
Jeff sighed. Yes, we are here for movie night. After we discuss the boring business of all of us nearly dying a whole bunch of times, we'll move on to the vital task of watching an old movie.
A black man in a purple robe asked,
What are we watching?
Jeff said, Thanks for not raising your hand, Tyler. We're watching Mad Max Fury Road.
Gary said,
Mad Max? Good! Mel Gibson's the coolest.
Martin said,
Yeah, you're from 1992, aren't you? Yes. So?
So, enjoying Mel Gibson while you can.
Jeff said, As for your second question, what chart? The chart I haven't shown you yet because I only just got my first sentence out before I got sidetracked.
Jeff waved his magic wand and said,
Montreuillard diagram.
An easel holding a large chart appeared next to him. The left side of the chart had a list of the names of the wizards present. Along the top, Jeff had listed every event in which one or more of the wizards had nearly been killed, using shorthand titles like Orcs, Giant Squid, and Mud Elemental. A grid full of checkmarks illustrated which wizards had nearly been killed by each danger. The wizards were silent for a moment while they read and absorbed the information.
Jeff said, I only included peril that we've faced after finding the file, discovering that the world is a computer program, and coming back here to medieval England to pose as wizards. Whatever trouble some of you might have gotten into to make you decide to come here is your own business.
Britt the younger adjusted her glasses, peering across the room at the chart.
Huh. That's funny. I would have assumed that Martin had nearly been killed the most, but Philip just edges him out.
Yes, Philip said, stroking his beard. But I'd have you know that all of the attempts on my life have happened since I met Martin.
Martin said,
Jeff, I have to object. You say that Philip nearly killed me in our first duel. That's just not true.
Gwen shook her head, then brushed her light brown bangs out of her eyes and said,
No, Martin, but the villagers thought he killed you, and let's face it,
He could have if he'd wanted to.
Easily, Philip said.
Tyler said,
I see what you're getting at, Jeff. That's not a great safety record, but I mean, we are time-traveling wizards. Shouldn't we expect a certain amount of danger?
Yes, that's my point. We should expect danger, but we don't. That's why we keep getting caught with our pants down.
We wear robes, Gary said.
Yes, Gary. Now shut up. My point is that we need to be more prepared. We need to develop real means of defending ourselves and make sure that we have practice using them.
Gary said,
Well, yeah, obviously. That's why I created the Kato Protocol.
Yes, Jeff said. But I'm afraid that while having wizards just randomly attack each other without warning has been good for a few laughs, it hasn't really added to our tactical readiness.
Tactical readiness? You've been hanging around with Roy too much.
No, the rest of you haven't been hanging around with me enough.
Roy was an older man from an earlier time, with a crew cut so precise and severe it had become a way of life. Gary asked,
You want to hang out with me sometime?
Roy said,
I do not.
Gary shook his head and waved his hands.
Whatever. Look, the point is the Kato Protocol is in place so that we'll be ready for attacks and develop offensive weapons. And I think it's succeeded.
Roy said,
That's because you've mistaken jumpiness for vigilance. And you're using the wrong meaning of the word offensive. We want offensive, as in the opposite of defensive. Not offensive, as in it offends people. Like your inventions. The fart bomb. The helium voice spell. And the commando ray.
Martin said,
I've been meaning to ask you, how did you make a ray that caused people's underwear to disappear?
Gary smiled.
It was a happy accident. I was working on a wedgie ray, and it malfunctioned.
Britt said,
Look, Jeff, you're right to be concerned. But if you're this worried about it, why not do what we women did with Atlantis? Create a new place for yourselves somewhere far away that'll be safe, instead of living among all these primitive villagers.
Jeff said, Two reasons. One, if you look at the chart, you'll see that the vast majority of the things that have threatened our lives have come from other magic users, not the locals. Two, if you look closely at your own row on the chart, you'll see that more than half the times you've nearly been killed took place in Atlantis. Roy nodded.
It's impossible to create a safe place for people to go, because it becomes unsafe when people go there.
Jeff said, I don't understand why you all aren't taking this more seriously. We've all nearly been killed multiple times. Gary lost a leg. I had my power stripped away, then got dropped off of a cliff. You all nearly weren't able to hop back in time and save me. This is serious. Our lives are at stake.
Yeah,
Martin said.
But while you point out that we've nearly died 67 times, I'd remind you that we figured out a way to save ourselves 67 times. We always think of something.
Philip said,
Yes, but Jeff has a point. It would be smart of us to try to think of something in advance, instead of waiting for things to go wrong. What do you have in mind, Jeff?
I propose that we each develop a weaponized macro, a spell that will be a useful weapon, something that has real teeth. Then, when they're done, we'll share them with each other.
And who do we test them on?
Tyler asked.
The locals? Each other?
We'll test them and practice using them in regularly scheduled, organized skirmishes against some sort of artificial opposing army that we'll create. That way we won't have to pull our punches.
Gary said,
That actually sounds like fun.
Philip said,
All right, let's put it to a vote. All in favor of enacting Jeff's plan, raise your hand.
Everybody raised a hand.
And everybody in favor of having Jeff create the opposition army, raise your hand.
Everybody raised their hand, but Jeff. Jeff said, Wait 1 minute, this was my idea. Why do I get the hardest job? Roy said,
Because you suggested it. You never worked in a corporate environment, did you?
But why do I have to do it alone? I won't have time to work on a weapon of my own. Martin said,
Are you kidding? Jeff, if you do this right, you'll have the best weapon of any of us. You'll have an entire army you can summon and command any time you need it. And it can be any kind of army you want.
Jeff said, Oh, that's a really good point. Any suggestions?
Gary said,
Yeah, you should-
Does anyone but Gary have any suggestions?
Oh, come on, that's not nice. I'm gonna be fighting whatever you come up with, too, and of all of us, I'm the one who's been hurt the worst. If anything, my opinion should count double.
Tyler said,
I have a suggestion, Jeff.
Yes, Tyler? Gary said,
Man, what a ripoff!
Tyler said,
I suggest we hear Gary's suggestion.
The other wizards groaned. Gary said,
Thanks, Ty.
Thank me by making a good suggestion that isn't a waste of our time.
Right. Jeff, I think you should make an army of women.
The wizards groaned again, louder. Tyler shook his head.
You just couldn't do it, could you? It just wasn't in you.
Why? Britt the Younger demanded.
Why would Jeff make an army of artificial women?
Gary said,
Why wouldn't he?
Britt asked,
Did you miss the part where he said we're going to be fighting whatever it is he makes?
Gary said,
No, I didn't miss that. That's what I have in mind. He could make, what do you call them, Valkyries. The big tough women with the spears and helmets with wings on them. They'd be a challenge to fight. Britt, you have to admit that women are just as capable of fighting as men.
Gwen said,
He's right, Britt. You specifically do have to admit that.
Britt narrowed her eyes to slits.
Yeah, I suppose I do. So you're suggesting that Jeff make an army of tough female warriors for us to train against?
Gary said,
Yeah. And they'll be strong? There's no point in doing it if they aren't. And fierce. I wouldn't have it any other way.
I suppose I can get behind that.
Philip leaned over, put his hand on Britt's shoulder, and said,
I'd hold off on endorsing his plan just yet. Gary, what would these female warriors look like?
Like tough female fighters.
Everyone sat silently, waiting for Gary to say more.
They'd have great big swords and battle axes, and they'd be wearing armor.
Still, nobody spoke.
Like shiny metal bikinis.
Britt let out a frustrated grunt. Philip said,
There it is.
Martin said, You're picturing them riding on giant tigers and wolves, aren't you? Gary pointed at Martin.
Totally, see? Martin gets it.
Gwen said,
You want us to train against an army that looks like it was airbrushed on the side of a van.
Philip said,
Gary's a necromancer. His entire life looks like it's airbrushed on the side of a van.
Gary said,
All right, fine. So you don't want the army of Valkyries, whatever. I don't hear any of you making any suggestions.
Tyler said,
It should be period appropriate. No jet fighters or anything. It needs to blend in with this time.
Valkyries. They'd fit this time perfectly,
Gary muttered. Gwen said,
And it should look formidable. Whatever it is, just looking at it should scare you.
Valkyries look formidable,
Gary grumbled. Roy added,
And the enemy should be resourceful and adaptable. It should change its tactics in reaction to ours.
Valkyries are adaptable,
Gary insisted.
Really?
Britt asked.
How so? In what way, Gary, would you say that Valkyries are adaptable?
Well,
It seems to me that I've seen pictures where they're in a snowy setting and they're wearing a fur bikini instead of metal. That's something.
Yeah, that's something, all right.
Britt scowled. Jeff said, okay, this isn't getting us anywhere. I'll give it some thought, and I'll try to come up with something that addresses all of your requests.
Philip said, very good.
Jeff said, except Gary's, of course.
Philip said, very good indeed.